This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It goes without saying that the U.S. Postal Service is an important tool for any business reaching every household every single day. Now, Stamps.com is the easiest way to access all the amazing services of the post office. You see, Stamps.com never closes. You can print postage for letters or packages at your convenience 24/7. Mail everything from postcards to envelopes to packages, domestic or international. And create your Stamps.com account in minutes online with no equipment to lease and no long-term commitments. Click, print, mail, and you are done. I use Stamps.com because it is so easy and because of the convenience. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer which includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Rome. I love this service. You will too. Try it now. Stamps.com, enter Rome. That's Stamps.com, enter Rome.
I mean, look at every romantic movie there is. It's like, oh, he was unhappy, he was discontent, and then he found the amazing girl and she solved all the problems and now he's happy. That's not reality. Reality is you have to learn to choose happiness first. And then you can enjoy those things. Because if you're not happy before you have all those things, you're not going to be happy after.
Welcome to the Jim Rome Podcast. You are listening to episode 27. And my guest is 2-time Olympic gold medalist David Wise. David won the first gold medal ever awarded in free ski halfpipe at the Sochi Games back in 2014. He then chased that in dramatic fashion, going back to back. But it's not so much that he ripped another gold, but rather how he did it. Going legend on his third and final attempt, landing double corks in all four directions to post a 97.2 and repeat as Olympic champion. But as brass as that performance was, David Wise is so much more than just a great Olympian and a gold medalist. He's a husband and a father and a brother to an amazing sister. He has already lived an incredible life in just 27 years, and we are going to get into it and talk all about it. EP 27 gets spinning right after this word from my pals at Lumber Liquidators. It is a new year, and we all want to elevate our game to that very next level and make 2018 the best year ever. Well, if you're a contractor or a builder or a remodeler, listen up, because elevating your game this year just got a whole lot easier thanks to my friends at Lumber Liquidators and their new LL Pro Plus program. LL Pro Plus is Lumber Liquidators' new pro services team that you can call on for all your professional flooring needs. LL Pro Plus will help you absolutely destroy this year with professional pricing and dedicated support to get you what you need when you need it so you can get all your projects finished on time. LL Pro Plus gives you the ultimate value and quality, and with LL Pro Plus, no job is too large, no job is too small. So put the flooring experts on your team right now. Visit your local Lumber Liquidator store or simply go to lumberliquidators.com. That's lumberliquidators.com. Make 2018 the best year ever with Lumber Liquidators. Another week, another tape of voicemails, except this batch has got the potential to be a little bit different. And by different, I mean good. Because this batch has got some recognizable names on it. Now, I'm not saying that you need to be known in the jungle, my radio program, to leave a good voicemail, but I'm hoping that it breathes some life into this machine. I'm hoping it gets everybody else to step their game up. Remember, this is the place for you to talk about anything, anytime. So drop this number into your phone, 949-385-0447. 949-385-0447. It's your take line, your impression line, hell, your drunk dial line. It's all of that, and it is open 24/7. If you love this thing, keep it around by making it better. Do your part. Remember, Nothing is forever, especially this thing. 949-385-0447. Now let's check the tape.
You have 12 new messages. First new message.
Jim Rome, hey, it's 12 Wood Friday night. You need to come on.
Message deleted. Next message.
Hey, Jim, this is Josh in Denver. I'm really pissed that Josh in Detroit is ruining my name. He's a moron. He ruins the show every single time he calls. Change your name, dude. Don't go by Josh anymore. Nobody wants you to have that name. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Message deleted. Next message.
Rome, what's up? It's RTN. Did you see Mark and Pau Gasol collided in a game last night, injuring Pau? I hope he's okay, man. That was the worst result I've seen from two brothers getting together since Eric and Lyle Menendez doubled up.
Message deleted. Next message.
Holy shit, Jim Rome. This is Bill up in Oregon, and I just got through listening to the Jim Rome rap. I've been a loyal listener for over 20 years. Man, I wish you had dropped that when it came out. That was the most epic thing I've heard in the jungle in a long, long time. That Jim Rome rap is now your new bumper music from here on out. Peace. Later. Have a good day.
Message saved. Next message.
Rome, Russ from South Carolina. I just heard the rap song for the first time this morning because I couldn't catch it yesterday. That is off the hook. Everything in that song I can remember and relate to with your show because I've been listening that long. That is unbelievable. You might as well just give the $5,000 from this year's Smack Off directly to the guys that made that song. Game, set, match. I'm out.
Message saved. Next message.
Jim, unlike all those low-rent, low-IQ clones, I won't be watching the OJ interview on Sunday. That's because I can't stand the motherfucker. The only OJ-related story I'll ever tune into is the newscast reporting that old man Goldman exacted the ultimate revenge and took off OJ's dome with one clean swing of the axe. DM me Freddy and we'll come up with a plan. At Rick in Buffalo. If a dumb shit like OJ can get away with murder, then so can we. And if not, we'll go out legends. A win-win proposition. Thanks, Jim. I'm out.
Message saved. Next message.
Yeah, bros, what's up? Silk on the voicemail, can you believe it? Some logistics. I'm not going to be able to start my student teaching till a later date, but I am substitute teaching. So instead of only being at my alma mater, the mighty Huntington Beach High School, I'm in the whole district class. So you can find me at Edison. You can find me at Fountain Valley. You can find me at Ocean View, Westminster. I'm everywhere. I'm monitoring the show. Rex and the ABQ is on the rise. Lady Clones are still warring. Dan Lesk is still, you know, whatever he does. Alvy, obviously, superstar now. Even Austin Huff at the Oscars, crazy breath. So, clones, things are going well. Being a substitute is tough, but it's rewarding. I'm down with the kids. Youth of today. Talk to you guys later.
Message saved. Next message.
Hello, Jim. I was hoping that you would have picked up the phone. I just wanted you to know that I think that you are incredibly sexy. Subsequently, I have lost my teddy bear. By chance, can I sleep with you tonight? War Lady Clones and War the Podcast.
Message deleted. Next message.
What's up, Rome? This is Vinny outside of Knoxville, man. Man, when I saw you tweet that the Squad Brothers are going to be on the next episode, man, my excitement level was through the roof. And for any of us who still have our dads with us, the dose of perspective that you guys gave us talking about your late fathers is something that we all need to think about, and we got to cherish every moment and not take it for granted. Keep up the good work, man. Peace.
Message saved. Next message.
Unwar Parody Larry, this is Darren and Kina. I'm out.
Message deleted. Next message.
Hello, Jim. This is Vlad in Moscow. I wanted to congratulate you and this Brian Vogel on winning Icarus Oscar. In recognition, I'd like to invite you and Brian to come to Russia. Unfortunately, only can do one-way trip for you.
Message deleted. Next message.
Hi there. This is Andy from Rockland, and I was just listening to your show. I just made the best banana bread, and it's really easy. I wish you were here to taste it. Okay. The other thing I was going to talk to you about was the Giants. I think they're going to be good this year. But let's get back to my banana bread. It's really good. And you could actually use it in the morning, noon, at night. I probably sound like an idiot. I just want to tell you, I made banana bread. It's very tasty, just like you. I love your show. Okay, bye.
Message saved. You have no more messages.
So that was pretty amazing. Three guys with golden tickets dropping into the voicemails. The Bra breaking down his teaching days in the OC. RTN leaving a completely tired and lame Menendez Brothers reset. And Rick in Buffalo, did you honestly just invite Fred Goldman to lop Orenthal's dome off with you? My man, I know I said rules do not apply to the voicemail, but some rules always apply. Those rules would definitely cover murdering OJ. Wood, brother, you know I appreciate you chasing me down for the scoop. And those of you who love the Jim Rome rap, I did as well. And I would have played it 19 years ago if I heard it back then. Vinny in Knoxville, thank you for adding a dose of perspective to the Sklar Brothers episode. And Josh in Denver, good luck shaking Josh in Detroit. This guy's like the freaking herp. There is no cure. Listen, now that I'm on radio, TV, and satellite, you can see and hear me. For everybody who watches me on the CBS Sports Network and everybody listening, pay attention. Saying something sucks, still not a take. Having said that, snoring sucks. In fact, snoring is the worst. You know what's even worse than the worst? Snoring and not doing a damn thing about it. If you're listening, pull over. Park, get a Zipa. You've got nothing to lose except that horrible habit of snoring. Everything on Zipa.com is guaranteed or you get your money back. It's a win-win. Zipa has hundreds of five-star customer reviews. And check out the link on Zipa.com to a story on snoring devices from a major news network and see how well Zipa worked. Go to ZYPPAH.com. That's Zipa.com. Zipa is happy Z spelled backwards. Do it for yourself. Do it for the person sleeping next to you. Do it for all of humanity. Why won't you let me help you? Get a Zipa. Stop snoring. Go to Zipa.com. That's Zipa.com. It's not every day that you pull a guy out of an Olympic half pipe and right into my studio. A cat who went legend and got back to the top of the medal stand and did it after a year from hell. But somehow, David Wise managed to come out the other side and never lose his amazing positivity and perspective in life. So if you're keeping track, here is a quick sampling of the Jim Rome podcast. Hollywood A-listers like Brian Koppelman, Brian Fogel, and Keegan-Michael Key. Legendary quarterbacks like Kurt Warner and Aaron Rodgers. And now you throw a couple of golds around the pod's neck as well, because my conversation with David Wise is coming to you right now.
Go through enough airport security stations and have them take the gold medals out and everybody. For me, what really made it real was bringing it home, sharing it with my family and friends, the locals, you know, the people who have supported me for the longest and in the most intimate way, like just always being there for me, being able to really share it with them. That kind of made it real for me.
Now, I feel like you're sharing it with everybody. I mean, you even came in here with both these medals and you have absolutely no problem with anybody kind of breaking them out, seeing what they feel like, seeing what they look like. You said, I can go ahead and wear it if you want. I mean, clearly this is something you're sharing with everybody and not just the locals and not just your family.
Yeah, I mean, I could be stingy, but the reality is I can't take credit for these, you know? Like, more than half the journey has been other people supporting me. If nobody ever supported me, there's no chance I ever would have made it here. So I feel like it's partly my responsibility, and I want people to be excited about it. You know, I don't want to be the guy that everybody's like, oh man, it was cool to see him. I sure wish he would have let me touch his gold medal. I want to be the guy that people are like, wow, man, he let me touch his gold medal. Maybe I could do that someday, especially when I'm talking to kids or interacting with young people who have their future ahead of them. I'm always like, hey, look what I've done. I'm no more talented than you are. I'm no better looking than you were. You can do anything.
you know, it's there's that whole thing about, listen, I can do this. I can hold this up. And if you do the types of things that I do, this too is possible for you. But man, it's the way it went down. I mean, it's the way it went down. Let's talk about this for a minute. You're killing the first run. I mean, killing it. It's setting up like your best run ever. Then what happened?
Yeah, it really was. It truly was. You know, putting that whole run together was a challenge in and of itself. And I had a really good practice. I hadn't landed all four of the double corks in the same run, but I had put them all in various practice runs. So I was confident. I knew it was a good day. And yeah, my first run, I landed that switch right double cork, which is the first trick in my run, better than I've ever landed it in my life. And I was going higher than I've ever gone on it in my life. And you know, kind of on my style trick, my right 10, I just, you know, held the grab as long as I could. And I was just like really enjoying it. All of a sudden my ski came off and I was piled up in the transition. And I was like, I was honestly taken back. Like, I was like, hold on. That's not how this run was supposed to go.
Doesn't happen to me.
That doesn't happen. Like, this isn't real life. You know, I was truly surprised. And I was even more surprised the second run, because, you know, everybody has one here and there. And once in a while you walk out of a binding. It just happens in half pipe skiing because the tolerances are so high for how much pressure we're putting on our equipment. So it was kind of normal, almost normal to have one, but to have two different sets of skis fail on two different runs was just like, I was like, are you kidding me? I said that to myself as I'm watching on my second run, watching my ski just kind of go floating away from me. I'm like, are you kidding me right now? Like, is this real life? And, you know, I feel like that's just the way it was written. It was supposed to be intense. It was supposed to be one of those all or nothing moments. Because sure, if I had landed my first run, I would have been sitting comfortably on the podium. And that would have made things a lot easier for me to just cruise and enjoy it. But there's something about those playbook moments when it's all or nothing.
I mean, it's all or nothing. We'll set that up in a minute. But just for 1 second on that second run, I mean, yeah, it can happen once. Yes, it'll happen once. But let's be very clear about this. It doesn't happen twice. It doesn't happen when you spend literally your entire life preparing so that sort of thing doesn't happen. And then it happens on the biggest stage on the biggest day.
Right. Yeah, it felt so faded. You just can't ignore the signs sometimes,
right?
Where it was literally like you said, I mean, I've been working, I've been known for equipment issues. I've broken more skis and more bindings and more pieces of equipment than anybody else in the game. So it's not surprising that it happens to me once, but at the same time, we've been working all season long, my ski tech and I, to have all that crap ironed out before we get to the Olympic Games. So it's like, it doesn't even happen to me that you walk out of a ski twice in the same day. And that never happens. And then it certainly never happens that you walk out of a ski twice in your competition. Well, these weren't practice runs. They were competition runs at the Olympic Games. And it seriously felt like fate. I was like, wow, all right. And, you know, I'm a spiritual person and I really believe that things happen for a reason. So my response to God in that situation was like, hey, if you don't want me to succeed, I guess I won't. You know, like, I'm not here to seek my own glory. I'm here to glorify God with what I do. I feel like skiing's my act of worship. It's my way of creating. I believe we were created by a being who wants us to go out there and create new things. So I was just like, all right, I guess that's not the way you wanted this to go these first two runs. But I still had like a feeling just in my core that I was like, But that's not what I'm here to do. I'm not here to land. I'm not here to crash on three runs. I still have this run, and I've been thinking, dreaming this up for a really long time. And now, you know, I still have one more chance. It's a best of format. That's the best thing about my event is the difference between glory and destruction is one run.
It's an amazing thing to say. I mean, for you to get to that point, I mean, to get that kind of clarity, and obviously your faith is so strong and it had something to do with it, but still, man, you got to execute. I mean, this is literally, I mean, everything, you still have to go out for 4 years, all that work, everything, every thought, every work, every piece of work, all comes down to one run, one last run. Sure, you have the format and you have another opportunity, but what's it like to have everything, all the years come down to that one last run?
Oh man, it could have been the absolute easiest situation to crumble in of my existence, right? Like
many have, bro.
Yeah, and I have too. I you know, one of my favorite quotes is from Michael Jordan, where he talks about succeeding because he's failed so many times. And I feel like that's kind of my journey too. Is I've been in the clutch situation so many times. Oh, he crashed on his first two runs. Maybe he can get it on his third one, and I didn't. And so I've learned more and more. I'm not going to say that the next time I have the game winning shot, if you will, I'm going to succeed. But I kind of realized the more pressure you put on yourself in those situations, the less likely you are to succeed. So it's kind of you kind of have to embrace it. You can't pretend that you're not in a high pressure situation. At least I can't. I know some guys, they can turn their music way up and they can just be like, I'm not in this. I'm not, like, they can force themselves to believe that they're not in the situation that they're
sure.
in. They're just, it's just another run through the half pipe. I'm not here. There's the world's not watching. For me, my philosophy is a little bit more of like embracing it. Like, yeah, this is intense. Yeah, this is as clutch as it gets. But at the same time, all the work is done. You know, I can't go back. I can't live in the past and regret not having done an extra practice run or done that extra session at the gym getting strong. All of that stuff is in the background, and I know that I did everything I could in those situations. So I'm as prepared as I possibly can be. My ski tech, we crank the bindings all the way up as high as they go, which is dangerous. You know, it's taking a risk. If I was to crash with my bindings that high, I could torque a knee or break a leg.
Right.
So, but at the same time, on that day, it felt like the right thing to do. It was like, no, these damn
if
things.
If not then, then not, when, right?
They're not coming off my feet. Like, I want my skis to, I want my feet to fall off before my skis come off, because I need to land this run. I want to land this run. So I just kind of had that confidence of like, all the work is done and whatever happens, happens. But I can't succeed if I don't go out there and give it everything I have.
So it's exactly what you did. Now, it's the obvious question, but how about that second one comparing to the first one? How does the second compare to the first? Because obviously they're very different.
Yeah. They're both, I feel like they're two highlights of my life. They're two almost like just banners for things, for eras of my life. They're both kind of like capped off with these gold medals. But what's cooler about this second one is that I really feel like the sport won as well. You know, I wasn't just me winning. It was actually the sport putting on a really good show. And we got to show the world, hey, this is what freeskiing halfpipe is all about. Everybody was going big. I mean, Alex's runs were the best. I mean, aside from mine, whoever wants to judge it, aside from mine, his runs were the best runs that had ever been done. Hmm. And so to have that, both of the best skiing that's ever been done on game day at the Olympics is like unheard of, you know? So I really feel like we all won, and you know, plus I was on the back end of some really, really challenging times personally. And so to get through all that with my wife and my family and have all of those people there supporting me just made it so, so meaningful. Sochi was meaningful for sure. It was, I mean, that was a journey in and of itself. And it was an epic journey just to get the sport get half pipe into the Olympics. So Sochi was awesome. But the conditions were marginal. We didn't get to really put on a performance the way that we wanted to. So that was lacking. And then this time around, I had my two kids down there cheering me on. So, I mean, you really can't. I couldn't do it any better. I couldn't write it any better because my daughter didn't get to go to Sochi, but she was there. My son was there. It was amazing.
And you'll always have that. You'll always have that. They'll always have that. Kids change everything. You talked about your personal journey, and I think that some people listening right now know it, but obviously some people listening don't know this. You and I spoke for the first time 4 years ago when you won gold, but you and your wife, Alexandra, and your entire family have been through so much since then. For those who don't know, in 2015, your sister Christy was paddleboarding and she was hit by a boat, which then fled the scene. Her twin Jessica sent out a group text saying that Christy could possibly lose her leg, maybe even pass away. I mean, this literally is all of our worst nightmare, right? Having a loved one experience something that horrific. What's it like to get a text like that? And then what was it like in the immediate aftermath?
Yeah, it was certainly one of those situations that we all hope and pray not to be in. It wasn't the first time we've been through hard times as a family. And it wasn't the first time that they've leaned on me and said, hey, we really need you to pray for us right now. We really need your support. And Yeah, my first reaction was just to fall down on my knees and say, God, if you can keep my sister around, my original reaction was just like, I hope she survives, because I didn't know anything. I knew almost nothing. And Jess, who even was sending out the text, knew almost nothing too. So there was a long period of time where we're just like, we don't really know what's going on. And there's nothing that you can do. You're powerless. And then the immediate aftermath was, I mean, the first thing we hear is, okay, she's going to live. And then almost at exactly the same time, it's like, well, she's going to live, but she's going to lose her leg. So, it was a weird mix of celebration and mourning. It's like, well, I'm mourning the loss of her leg with her, but I'm also celebrating the fact that she's alive.
Right.
And like, that's been the main thing that I've tried to remind my sister throughout the process is, hey, I know it's hard. I mean, she's as athletic as I am. We've been competing against each other for our entire life and, you know, always going on adventures together. So I know that the loss of her leg was tragic for her. I mean, it's one thing if somebody who works a desk job and likes to watch movies all the time and doesn't do things outdoors loses a leg, but it's a whole different thing if somebody who is putting that leg to using it for everything it's worth loses one. It was a tragic loss. So, but I've just constantly tried to remind her, hey, I'm glad you're still here. I know it's hard. I know this is one of the hardest things this is going to be the hardest thing you ever go through in your life, but I'm still glad. I'm glad I still have you.
You know, having never been through something like that, I wonder what it does to you and what you think. For instance, is there any part of you, I mean, let's be honest, not only is she an amazing athlete and it changes, it all changed in an instant. Like, her entire life changed in an instant, and she's so active. So going forward, there are going to be no easy days. I mean, every action, every moment, everything's going to be a challenge. Did you ever find yourself, because the mind, you can't always control what you think, you try to, but did you ever think to yourself, you know, maybe if she had passed and gone to a different place, there wouldn't be this struggle? Or did you immediately go to this default thing of, you're still here? That's the thing.
Yeah. I mean, I told her, hey, I know there's times when you're going to think about this and you're going to think it would have been easier to be up in heaven right now, slapping high fives with Jesus, hanging out. You know, there's certainly that aspect of it. And that, I think, is one of the hardest things for amputees or people who are disabled from accidents in general, is just this instantaneous change of life. It's one thing if you get sick and you feel it coming on, or somebody prepares you for it, but it's a whole different thing if there's one moment of impact that changes your entire life forever. Because it's hard not to play that what if game. Like, what if we hadn't gone paddleboarding that night? What if those people hadn't been in that situation, being irresponsible the way they were? And it's so easy to blame the other people.
Why me?
Why me? Why did we have to be in that exact space at that exact time? And for us, it's just, we've just fallen back on our faith and said, hey, you know what? Whether we like it or not, everything happens for a reason. And I can speak to that through my journey too. I look back on the hard stuff that we've been through, between my sister losing her leg and my wife losing her dad, and just some of the hard personal times we've gone through. I look back on it and I have grown, maybe matured to an understanding, like, would I have changed those things in the moment? Absolutely. But looking back on them now, I'm like, you know, I really can't say I'm not glad for those things, because they have made me so much stronger. They've made me so much more prepared for those situations. And that might be the power that I was drawing on when it came down to landing a third run and having crashed on my first two. It's like, I can't go back and say, if I hadn't had all those struggles and learned all of that perspective along the way, maybe I wouldn't have been able to pull it off.
Maybe not. I mean, you've lived an entire life and you're just 27. And to finish this thought on Christy, I mean, let's be honest about this. I mean, she is amazing. She not only came through this, but understand, she's a warrior. She's an Air Force absolutely. Captain. She returned to flying duty to become the first female amputee to ever accomplish that. Very clearly, she had a reason to keep grinding and striving and pushing. That was her mission. I know that maybe she leans on you and you play a role of reminding her, hey, we love you. We're happy you're here. That's the main thing. But what has she and her experience taught you?
She has changed the way that I look at the world, because I think everybody feels like giving up sometimes. Everybody feels like it's too hard. This can't be done. And that's where my sister has just always ignored that. And she ignored that in her life before the accident, and she's ignored it since. Everybody told her, you know, I mean, one of the first things people told her was, "You'll never fly again." One of the first things like people told her is, "You'll never dance again. I'm sorry, this is really tragic, and I just want to tell you up front, these are the things that you're never going to be able to do again." And our goal as siblings is, how many of those things that people told you can't do, can we do? And, you know, within months of her accident, we were skydiving. I mean, and within like almost the same amount of time that it takes to recover from like an ACL reconstruction, she was out there skiing again. And so that tenacity is really infectious. I mean, it's affected my life. It has. It has made me, first of all, appreciate what I have so much more, because, you know, when you're caught up in the grind and especially the position that I'm in, where the position that I was in during the interim years going from between Sochi and here, I was getting dropped by sponsors. I was having people, you know, tell me, "Oh man, your career is kind of winding down. What are you going to do next?" And it's easy when you're in those situations to get jaded about it and be like, "Man, like things aren't going my way." But instead of doing that, she has always been like, I don't care whether things are going my way or not. I'm going to do what I can to enjoy this. And so it's just changed the way that I approach the world.
Yeah, I wonder also, to your point, though, you suffered some devastating injuries, and you were dealing with all these things off the mountain with your family. And as you point out, sponsors are starting to leave, and all of a sudden it's not so easy, and you're not winning, and you're trying to get back, but you're kind of separated between these two things. Like, I'm taking care of my family, I want to take care of my business, things are not going well, and I'm busted up physically. What was your mindset at that time? What got you through that time?
Yeah, I mean, you're gonna find, whether it's now or 10 years from now or 50 years from now, at some point in your life, you're gonna run into times when things aren't going your way, business wise, family wise, socially, whatever. It's there's gonna come a time when sponsors aren't supporting you. There's gonna come a time when, you know, you're struggling to pay the mortgage or whatever it is. And what I kind of realized is, at the end of the day, none of those things matter. None of those things really matter to me as much as my family does. None of those things really matter to me as much as being a good husband, being a good father. And so that kind of empowered me to get through those times. It doesn't really, you know, like, I really wish that these sponsors would see me for who I am and know, like, it's a long-term bet, man. It's not 1 year at a time anymore. We're doing this Olympic cycle is every 4 years. And I tried to remind them, like, when they were pulling the plug and saying, "You know what, this contract is out." I tried to remind them, "Hey, like, I'm here.
Don't
I'm here.
Give
for
up
good.
On me.
Yeah, don't give up on me. You've seen the history. You know who I am. But if they're not going to support me, I know my family is, and my family did. And also, I think it comes down to the fact that, like, my family's contentment isn't based around my success either. And so my wife being a good example of that, my daughter being a good example of that, realizing that they were content even if daddy doesn't succeed in what I'm doing, they're just content to be part of my crew, part of the journey, really empowered me. It really just freed me up. There's no stress when you're not worried about if you're going to succeed or not. Then you can just go out there and enjoy it. You can go out there and just be present.
It's part of who you are, but it's not who you are. It's not your entire identity. Hey, listen, I mean, I don't want to hit on these really tough things and these negative things, but the fact of the matter is, you've been through so much. If the family is that important, if it's about your wife and your kids, and clearly it is, you go back to the spring of 2016 and you were in Norway and you get a call from Alexandra that Malachi, who's about a year and a half at this point, your son, stops breathing, he's convulsing, he's turning blue. Again, I got to ask the question, you're on the other side of the world and you get a phone call like that. How are you supposed to process that?
Yeah, you tell me, man. It's
right.
I almost feel like nothing, no emergency we've ever had as a family, my wife and I, has ever happened when I'm home. I mean, it's just like life has been so hard on my wife while I'm gone. It was a similar situation to what I dealt with Christy's leg. Is like, I don't know how to support you. I guess I'll just pray, you know, I'll just pray that this goes well. I'll pray that Malachi gets through this. And, Yeah, man, you just learn to appreciate the things you have so much more. Nobody wants to be in that situation. Nobody wants to wonder like what's going. I mean, I had no idea. She really had no idea what was going on. Turns out it was kind of something that's a little bit more common than we realized. He just had spiked a fever really bad and got into a seizure. But I mean, my wife, the way she describes it, he's literally turning blue. His eyes are rolling back in his head and he's convulsing. I would have thought he was dying too. I mean, that's where your mind automatically goes. So, that was one of many things. And I think that, things like that in life tend to happen in like waves. It's like when you go surfing and you go out there and you just get hit by a wave. And then by the time you get up for air, there's another wave.
Get slammed again.
And then you get slammed again. And then you're tomahawking through the bubbles. And then you get your head out of the water and you get hit by another wave. And that's what that time in my life was like. But going back to what I was saying earlier, I wouldn't change any of those things because they enabled me to be where I am. They made me stronger. It's a cliche, but what doesn't kill you does make you stronger.
Well, and this is obviously evidence of that. I mean, there's even more that we can get into, but the bottom line, and Alexander, as you point out so many times, you're not here when this happens. How did the two of you get through all of this, and how important did your faith play in this?
Yeah, she, my wife is the most like astounding, just warrior personality that I know. She truly, I don't think that I could have gotten through all of the things that we've gotten through with anybody else. She truly has, if anything, even in those difficult situations, she's used them as an opportunity to build me up instead of focusing on herself and saying, oh, you're not here for me. If you had been here, things would have been different, and focusing on the things that I can't control and she can't control. She just said, hey, we're going to do the best we can as a family and we're going to get through this. We're going to see the other side. And so her gifts and our faith, like it really has been the foundation for us. We just, going back to what I said at the beginning, like I'm not here to glorify myself. I'm here to glorify a God that created us, and she feels the same way. And that really just enables us to be who we are.
So then knowing everything you've been through, what's it like to be standing on that podium with a gold medal around your neck, to have your daughter and your son run over and stand right there with you on the podium? It was an amazing picture to see. What did it feel like?
that was certainly probably the highlight of my life so far, was not only doing what I had set out to accomplish professionally. I had literally done everything that I had hoped to do, and that was great. But it would have been a little bit bittersweet not to have my family there with me, because they are such a part of that journey. Most of the time, society focuses on the headliner. They focus on the star. They focus on the guy in the spotlight. But they don't realize how much of the story has to do with the people in the background. I really could not have done this without my wife. I really could not have done this without the support of my kids. And I did it for them. So to have them there standing up on the podium with me, I mean, I'm sure we broke some rules there. I'm sure the kids aren't allowed on the podium at the Olympics. But it was so worth it to me, because that truly was who it was about.
All right. So in above and beyond that, well, there is nothing above and beyond that. That's as good as it gets. I think you know that already, even at your age. But you're also a proud member of Tattoo Nation. Before I get into some of the other ink, I want to know about the matching tattoo you got with Alex, your teammate, Alex Ferreira, in Seoul. Well, you got this done between the qualifiers and the finals. What did you guys get?
I had kind of had this idea that I wanted to get a tattoo in Korea. I like the idea of like getting something permanent that marks things that happen in your life. And so with all the things that I had been through, just making the team for me was a lifetime accomplishment. And I was like, man, I want to put a stamp on this somehow. And so Alex, and I mentioned the idea to Alex, we were in Seoul getting ready for opening ceremonies. We had a couple of extra days with not a lot to do. And he was like, and I was like, hey, I'm thinking about getting a tattoo. And he was really interested in the idea. He's like, yeah, that sounds cool.
You
like,
should.
We made it. And so I asked him if he wanted to get one too. And he was like, yeah. And so we started looking around for things to get. I had been kind of thinking about it for a while. And we were just walking around and we saw this, the Pyeongchang logo, the Olympic logo. And it looked cool. And we looked at the meaning, and the meaning was pretty solid. And we were like, yeah, that's cool. So let's get it. So I got the Pyeongchang logo.
Let's see it.
Pretty big here on the back of my arm.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
I made fun of Alex after the contest was over because he got it. He got his in red. I got mine in black. He got his in red. But he got it just a little bit smaller than mine.
Sure.
Not much smaller. And I was like, man, you set the tone. You got a second place tattoo.
That's the best. So, that's great. You got the silver medal of tattoos too, bro.
Silver tattoo. So good. You should have gone bigger.
That is really funny. I mean, I don't have ink, so I don't know, but I would imagine it's got to heal up. Any concern that thing was going to heal up before the gold medal run? I mean, you got that a couple of days before the day.
No. I mean,
whatever,
you
know, right?
We're action sports guys. Like, and I get this question all the time.
Dude, that's
too.
The bronze medal questions I just hit you with, man. Just let's strike that from the record.
Yeah. No, people are always asking me, oh, like, because I play sports in the offseason. I play softball and soccer and football and stuff. And people are like, oh, don't your contracts prohibit you from that? And the reality is my sport is more dangerous than any other sport I can play. So I think the sponsors just kind of understand.
That's
so
awesome.
The same thing with the tattoo. Yeah, like if I was a worrywart, then maybe I would have been like stressed out about getting an infection or something. But I was just like, nah.
Like I said, that was a stupid question. I retract that. You know, listen, I got to ask you on some level. Let's be real now. On some level. You may not have even had the most memorable run in the pipe in South Korea. It could go to Elizabeth Swaney. I got to know, what do you make of her making her way down the pipe the way she did? What does the best half pipe skier in the entire world think when he sees that?
It's, you know, I guess the thing that's interesting about that whole situation for me is that to us, it was nothing new. I'm not sure if she was in Sochi or not. You guys can fact check me on that later, but I know that I've seen her and known her for a really long time, and this isn't a new thing. So it was just that it happened to get picked up by the right person who wrote about it, and then other people wrote about it, and then all of a sudden it was getting major attention. For us, it was nothing new. Like we were just kind of
knew already.
I was honestly surprised that it got so much attention. It wasn't like we were really surprised. And she's not the only one who went around. Went around the standard Olympic qualification process. The reality is making the Olympic team especially in my sport from the US, there's four spots. And probably the top six guys in the world or, you know, guys, six out of the top 12 in the world are Americans. So you're gonna leave two guys at home, the fifth and sixth place guys who could potentially be on the podium on game day. And so the qualification process is super tough. And so we've seen a lot of guys, both in slopestyle and half pipe and big air for snowboarding, kind of go around the qualification system. Maybe they have dual citizenship, whatever it is, and they qualify from another country and go. So this is not abnormal for us. What I will say is Elizabeth, like, she takes more flack than anybody for what she does. And I certainly couldn't do that. That's not in my personality. I think people who have watched me compete long enough know that I pretty much go for victory. I don't go for second place or third place or 10th place. I'm not there to participate. I'm there to try to change the game. And so it wouldn't work for me personally to do that. But she had to ride this train for a long time to get there. And so you can say what you want about her talent or her skills on a pair of skis, but she has some tenacity just to get through it and just to bear with all the flack.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's something to it. So at the end of the day, do you respect it? I mean, she did it. She kind of gamed the system. She's there. She earned it in a different way. Or do you feel like, come on now, that's not what this is all about. And you took an opportunity from somebody who might have been more deserving or maybe might have even had a chance to hit the podium.
No. So both. Yeah, I certainly admire her grit and that she saw it through. And I'm happy for her. I mean, she set a goal. It certainly was different than my goal, but she was an Olympian too. And so I'm happy for her. But at the same time, I don't think it's real good for the sport. You know, I don't think it gets people excited about the sport to see that. And, but at the same time, I don't know. I'm kind of 50-50 on it because she didn't take a spot away from anybody else. She took a spot that her country wasn't going to use anyway, so she didn't take any opportunity away from anybody. And it's not like they limited the field size because she qualified. There's a little bit of a flex zone there where it's whether it's 26 women who start or 28. So she didn't take anybody else's opportunity away. So I'm not upset about it from that perspective. But at the same time, I feel like it's the Olympics. You know, you should be at the top level to be competing.
I see both sides. I see where you're going with that. Now, I'm looking at another tattoo, and it brings me to the next question. You're working this winter-summer thing. Mm. You're going to compete in the summer games. What are you going to do?
I don't know if it's going to be summer games. Compound bow archery is not in the summer games.
Okay.
Yeah, there's potential that might get added. But I love shooting bows, man. It was after my Olympic gold medal in Sochi. A friend of mine who's a professional archer and hunter, Remy Warren, gave me a bow. And because I was talking to him and I was just telling him how crazy my life had been and how kind of overwhelmed I was with all the attention. And he was like, man, I feel like you're an outdoorsman like me. I feel like you would really enjoy shooting a compound bow. And my wife will tell you, it developed into a pretty serious addiction pretty fast. Just because I loved the way that you have to be focused and athletic about it almost, but you also have to be really calm and slow your heart rate down. So it was a little bit of, it was like a mental and physical challenge for me. So I've been getting really into shooting archery lately, and starting this summer, going into the future, I'm going to try to make a go at professional archery on the target side of things.
Well, knowing you, you're going to go all in on this too.
I'm all in.
Yeah. Where does that leave you? I mean, do you walk off on this gold, or do you ski again in 2022, or have you not decided? Where's your head at?
I've decided. I'm absolutely committed.
You're in.
Yeah, I'm in. If you had asked me that 2 years ago,
right,
I might have had a different answer. I might have said, "Oh, I'm just going to get through Pyeongchang and then see." But now, having gotten through Pyeongchang, I'm all in. I'm really enjoying doing what I'm doing, and I feel like I have a rare gift in life that I get to do what I love and make money at it. So to just give that up and just say, "Oh, I'm kind of tired of this," I think would be doing a disservice to everybody else who doesn't have that opportunity. So, sure. And I'm just having fun, and I haven't found the limit yet. I haven't found the limit of what I'm capable of doing. Maybe someday I will, and I'll be like, "There it is. I found the limit. That's all I can do. That's all I'm capable of. That's all I can do with the body that I've been given and the assets that I have." I haven't found that yet. So I still have things that I'm dreaming up. I mean, pretty much as soon as my run was over in Pyeongchang, I started thinking, all right, this is what I want to do next. So, you can look forward into hopefully following my journey to the next one.
All right. So let me ask you this, and one final thought. I mean, given what you've been through, it's amazing to me that you are as positive as you are, and listening to this conversation, I now have a sense of why that is, but I mean, we all know people like that, right? There's always that one person in the group who never has a bad day, who's always happy, who's always upbeat, who's enthusiastic, who's energetic. Do you think, are people wired for that? Or can you choose to be happy? Can you choose to be joyous every single day? Is it a choice?
I truly believe to my core that joy, contentment, happiness, generosity, all of these things that to me are the most valuable assets, humility. Those are all choices. You can choose to be grateful for the things that you do have. I think that that's one of the main problems in our society right now is we get caught up in this if then mentality. Like, if I get that car that I want, then I'll be happy. If I find the right person for me and they make everything good, then I'll be happy. If I get a big house, if I get enough nice things, right? That's where people are basing their happiness off. I mean, look at every romantic movie there is. It's like, oh, he was unhappy, he was discontent, and then he found the amazing girl and she solved all the problems and now he's happy. That's not reality. The reality is you have to learn to choose happiness first, and then you can enjoy those things. Because if you're not happy before you have all those things, you're not going to be happy after. I mean, I know so many rich, discontent people. It's ridiculous. I mean, most of the rich people I know are discontent because they sought that thinking it was an end when really it's just a means. It's just, I mean, for me, yeah, I feel like I got way more than I need. You know, I feel very, very fortunate. But, and I enjoy the things that I have. I love going mountain biking. I love spending time in the wilderness. I love, you know, buying my kids nice things and making them feel appreciated. But it's not the money or the things that make me happy. It's that I get to share those things with those people who matter to me. So I don't know. I kind of went on a rabbit trail there.
No, but. Dude, I love that. That's exactly what I was looking to see or hear. You know, when I was in college, I had this professor who said, hey, let me tell you kids something. A new bike is not going to change your life. A new bike is not going to make you feel better. And all I could think is, man, that is such bullshit. Believe me, a new bike is going to make my life much better.
Much better.
The typical 18-year-old mindset. This guy was right. A new bike was not going to fix my life. A new car was not going to fix the life. A new house was not going to fix the life. It's so true. If you're not content before these things, a shiny thing probably is not going to make it so much better.
It'll be a temporary fix, right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, sure. The moment you sit on that new bike, it's going to be sweet. The moment you sit in the driver's seat of that new car and hit the start button, it's going to be great. But all it is a mask. All you're doing is putting a Band-Aid on a bleeding wound. And you can't ignore the bleeding wound and say, wow, I'm still not content or happy with where I'm at.
So before I cut you loose, you've got a kid's book coming out that's going to drop this month, right? What's it about?
Yeah, it's actually kind of a fable about some of the things I've been talking about. How I was so caught up in seeking glory and trying to be the absolute best skier who ever existed, and that I was missing a lot of the things around me. And then my wife walked into my life and kind of changed my perspective, and I realized how fortunate I was. It's called Very Bear and the Butterfly, and the bear represents me because that's my wife. That was always my wife's nickname for me when we were first dating, and my nickname for her was Butterfly because I felt like she walked around the room without touching the ground. She was always just floating around. And so the story started out as a daddy story that I would tell to my daughter, Nayeli, when we would be traveling or whatever. We'd forget to bring books, or she'd be bored of the books that we had. I would just make up stories on the spot. I mean, endless stories. And I've always been a big reader. I love stories. So I would just make up the most absurd stories sometimes. But this one, Very Bear and the Butterfly, she really clung on to. Like, for it just resonated with her. And so she would always ask for that one. And so it got more and more elaborate with each telling. And then one day she asked me, Daddy, why isn't that a book? Why isn't your story a book? And I said, it was kind of one of those light bulb moments where I was like, yeah, why isn't it a book? So it was another thing that it's another thing on the long list of things that I tried to do. And I'm honestly surprised that it worked out. It was like, oh yeah, I'll try. I'll write it down. I'll see if somebody wants to illustrate it. I'll try to find a publisher. And all of the things work. Kind of like my journey to the Olympics. I'll try to make the Olympic team, and I'll try to put together a run that can win if I land it. But I never had the expectation that it was going to. I always said, I'd love for that to happen. Same thing with this book. I just feel really fortunate. This publishing company heard my story, heard about my dream, and said, hey, I want to make this happen. So we want to make this happen. So the publishing company's Children Leading Children. You can check out their website. You can also find the book on my website, MrDavidWise.com. And yeah, check it out. It's a fun book. It's a good age. It's kind of a book. I wrote it as a book that parents would read to their kids, but it's also reader friendly enough that like a 10 or 11, 12 year old could read it themselves too. And the illustrations are absolutely fire. The guy who did this tattoo here, Harry Lau, he's a tattoo artist out of Portland. And so he did the illustrations, and he's got that raw, edgy tattoo style to his drawings. So that's when I approached him, I kind of wanted it to be not just a typical kid's book. I wanted it to be, like I said, a fable about my life and me meeting my wife, but also I wanted it to be a little bit edgy. I wanted it to be a kind of an action sports children's book. So you guys can check that out.
It's consistent with the brand. Fire. Like I said, David Wise, so much more than a dude on a couple of skis. If you enjoyed this conversation, do me a solid. Hit me and him on Twitter with your thoughts. I'm at Jim Rome. He's at Mr. David Wise. Appreciate the feedback as always. And remember, there are a ton of different ways to connect between podcast episodes. My radio program airs daily on CBS Sports Radio, also now on Channel 213 on Sirius, Channel 201 on XM. Also, it's on every streaming app there is, plus jimrome.com. So if you don't have the show or know someone living in a market that doesn't carry it, do me a favor, spread the word about satellite radio. The jungle is now officially in space, and we're also on TV. For you DirecTV customers, check out our simulcast on CBS Sports Network, Channel 221. Or if you have Dish, the show is on Channel 158. Remember, we want to get you to these places, so hit me up if you need any help whatsoever. That's it for EP27. We'll be back with another one next week. Make sure you check it out. Thank you for listening. See you next time.